You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Hope you like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
You are listening to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features conversations with and the music of local musicians and traveling musicians performing in town. I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with singer-songwriter Ashley Daneman, who in January released her latest album, Big Dreams Die Slowly, and we'll be talking about that. But this Saturday, March 14th, beginning at 7:30, she performs at Jazz Tapas Bar, and on March 25th at 5 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency, she performs as part of the Savannah Jazz's monthly concert series. And on April 19th at 3 p.m., she is performing a concert at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah at their regular concert series. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Ashley Daneman.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, let's get to know Ashley Daneman. Tell me your musical journey.
Sure. Well, when I was 6 years old, I was put in piano lessons. My mother played the piano, so we had a big grand piano, a Steinway, in our living room, which was wonderful, although I didn't think piano lessons were wonderful. It's so strange how that happens. And by the time I was 10, I convinced her to let me quit because I was going into theater. And from there, I was really working on my voice, and I started training with a classical teacher because... And this wasn't until I was 14, because back then they thought that you really shouldn't train your voice until you're old enough, physically developed. We don't think that's true today, but at the time I learned your basic Italian stuff that any singer would learn, and I was doing musical theater on the side, so we worked on that repertoire as well. And from there, you know, I was listening to people like Carole King, James Taylor. My parents had this stuff around. Joni Mitchell, I found in high school as well. And I was writing very basic stuff on the piano and singing. So yeah, piano and voice was really core, as well as musical theater. And from that point, I wanted to leave home early. So I somehow convinced everyone to let me do this and graduate a year early. But I wanted to go into music school, but my best option for that was in an opera program at CCM, which is the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music. And I did that for a few weeks before I realized, wow, I cannot express myself within this paradigm. I need more flexibility. So that was the start of me turning to learning jazz, kind of on the street, as we say, from the musicians in Cincinnati, just from listening from my friends. And I did that. And I started singing gigs then, and then eventually I went to music school because I had all these holes in my knowledge. So I applied for Manhattan School of Music because that was my dream. And of course, for some crazy reason, they let in this person with a psychology degree and, you know, no trainings. But that was amazing. So I don't know if I'm going too detailed here or not enough, but... So that's where I got my real training, my high-level training. I worked with Kate McGarry, Theo Bleckman, Peter Eldridge, incredible musicians and singers, and just the heart with which they taught. It wasn't mechanical and technical always. It was, who are you as a person, and how are we going to nurture you, the artist? So that was 15 years ago now, and I've been doing my thing ever since, writing and singing jazz and assorted stuff.
And so when you left home, and home was where?
Toledo.
And you went down to Cincinnati, to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, CCM.
Mm-hmm.
But you found after a couple of weeks that opera was not your gig. And so you started working there as a gigging musician. as well as probably another job.
Yeah, I mean, it started with playing jam sessions. And to be honest, I sounded like a classical singer singing jazz, and it was not good. So there was a lot of development that had to happen there organically on the side. So, yeah, I was working other types of jobs.
And did you then continue at the University of Cincinnati for your degree, psychology degree?
I did graduate with a degree in psychology. And shortly after that, I ended up moving to Washington, D.C., which was a wonderful place to be a part of a music community and just learn everything from everyone. It was awesome.
I've heard that before from a variety of different music communities, that the Washington-Baltimore area is actually a very productive area in terms of learning one's skills, irregardless of the type of music you're learning. Hmm. I mean, I've heard that from classical musicians as well.
Yeah.
It seems that the musicians there are just very helpful.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people there, and there's a lot of people there with access to New York City and Philadelphia, and there's also Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore. So there's just a lot going on. You know, jazz is a communal music, and there's a very strong communal aspect to that music there. And you raise your hand and say, I want to learn and I want to do the work, and they are like, yeah, we got you.
And so did you then continue gigging there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. I did that. I lived there for 7 years until I went to New York to go to school.
And so it was a process of developing your skill set on the street, so to speak. You working with musicians in first Cincinnati and then in the Washington, Baltimore area.
Yep.
And then you went to school mm-hmm. again for music. Mm-hmm. But this time you went to a place where the education had, by that time, one was seeing more and more conservatories or music schools having jazz programs. And so probably when you started at Cincinnati, there really wasn't anything like that.
Interestingly enough, there was a strong jazz program at CCM.
Oh.
And when I started in opera and I said, oh, just kidding, no thanks. A couple years later, I did try to audition back in to the music school to pursue jazz, and they didn't select me. So,
and so then at the Manhattan School of Music.
Yes.
You then studied with some really heavy hitters, like Theo Blechman.
Yeah.
I mean,
so special.
He is really unique in terms of being able to create in a variety of genres.
Mm-hmm. He's incredible, and he brings his sound, which is, you know, a combination of his voice and his spirit to anything, and it's like adding a spice or, you know, or a centerpiece. It's like it just complements and enriches the music.
Yeah. I've had a chance to talk to him at festivals, but for some reason I've never had him on a show. He has a new album coming out in the more classical realm with composer David Lang. So I'm right now working on trying to David and Theo to chat on one of my other shows, the Contemporary Classics. After then going to the Manhattan School of Music, then it's really full-time as a jazz singer.
Well, let's qualify that a little bit. So I have children, and my husband is also a musician. So it was a lot of patchwork quilt energy. We were always doing music and always moving forward with our projects, but always prioritizing the needs of the family. And one of the ways that we did that is by starting a music school where we used to live. Before we moved here to Savannah, we lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And we're like, how can we make money with our really specialized skills and not abandon our kids every other week? And so we just started what we initially called the Jazz and Creative Institute, because we wanted to create a space for jazz musicians where we were and to teach others what we loved so much.
And why Kalamazoo?
Well, I had family there, and my husband went to Western Michigan University, which is there, and he actually grew up in Grand Rapids. So when we met in New York City, that seemed like the logical place to go when, you know, going to have a family. So
I'm somewhat familiar with Kalamazoo. I have a friend who works at Western Michigan. Well, nice places to eat downtown, right on the main street.
Anyways. It's a great town.
It's a great little town.
Yeah, and we go back multiple times a year. We just play New Year's Eve there, so.
And so when did you move to Savannah?
I moved here in the fall of 22.
And why?
It was a little random, but also I would say in hindsight, probably not. Basically, I was starting to experience burnout with the pandemic, running a business with young kids, and just my own limitations as a person. And I just needed a change. I needed to go to the ocean is what I told my husband. I said, let's pack up our stuff and go to the ocean. And, you know, he wasn't far behind me. He was feeling similarly, but he had been applying for jobs for 6 months. So we packed up our place, and I got us an Airbnb on the Outer Banks because I said, I don't care. I'm just going to the ocean. I'm going to restore my soul no matter what it takes. And he ended up a week before we were going to leave. He ended up getting offered this job at Savannah Music Festival running their jazz program. So we're like, I guess we're, you know, canceling the Airbnb and going to Savannah, which was wonderful. And it's been lovely here. And I'm grateful to live here.
Great. And so your husband is a musician, and he runs the jazz program as part of the Savannah Music Festival.
Correct.
And we have talked with people at the Savannah Music Festival about that jazz program a couple times. So that is a really exciting new way to assist the development of young jazz players.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can see how the moving to that was a natural move from what you were doing there in Kalamazoo.
Yeah, so Benji and I, that's essentially what we were doing, is we were running a community jazz school, a jazz program. It did branch out into every other genre and all types of things, because that's what people wanted. But at the core of it, yeah, it was literally plug and play. He's been doing this, and now he's going to do it here. So, yeah.
And up in Kalamazoo, you were working with both instrumental musicians as well as vocal musicians?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the program here is pretty much strictly instrumental.
At present, yes. Yeah. You know, jazz singing, there's a lot of opinions about it. I'll say that, I guess. Love it or hate it. You know, I personally think it's quite sacred, but depends on how you do it. But it takes some intention if you're going to teach a young singer alongside a bunch of instrumentalists. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit nuanced. So I think sorting that out is more easily said than done.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with singer-songwriter Ashley Daneman. And so we have the new album. And the new album is Big Dreams Die Slowly.
Yeah.
And that's the first cut on the album. What was the origin of this album?
Survival. When we moved here, it was like I finally had the space to fall apart completely, which my body kind of did do. That was really hard to lose my identity in the community where I came from. I was well established. People knew who I was, and I had work. And then I moved someplace where no one knew I existed or what I did or, you know, how I could contribute. I didn't have a job here, and so I didn't have a built-in community. And there were other things that I was grieving from kind of pre-COVID. And I don't know if you're like this, but I think for myself, there's kind of before COVID and after COVID. And that's why I say I didn't really bounce back, because it was more of a pause. And it was so confusing, you know, after you spend all the time that I did in my career. But I thought, if I'm anything, then I'm an artist. And I'm going to test this hypothesis by booking a studio date. And thankfully, I had the money to be able to do that. And it was just kind of, you know, I almost canceled the session three times because I know how much I believed in myself still. But I just kept thinking, well, you know, if I know anything about myself, it's that this is central. This is core to who I am. So let's experiment. And I did make the session. And I have to say, my husband is a huge supporter of me, not just musically and project wise, but just as a person. He really helps me be able to do what I do in a lot of ways. So he was co-producing that album and, you know, making it all happen as well. So the 3 months before that I gave myself to this session, I just made myself go to the piano. I made myself write. I said, it doesn't matter what it sounds like. We're not going to judge any of this. We're going to just untangle this ball of chaos. And we're going to do it through music, as I've always done. And we're going to trust that process. So, you know, it was a different process than my other albums. It was just a survival thing.
And so that explains a lot about the album in terms of the songs. The album, by the way, is pretty much all originals with the exception of two covers. And one of the covers is an arrangement for that cover by someone else. But did you do most of the arranging, instrumental arranging, for the rest of the songs on the album?
Yeah, I write everything. And then I hire the right musicians.
Was the recording done locally?
In Chicago.
Okay. And how did you go about selecting the musicians? I guess you worked in Chicago quite a bit?
Those guys, we would call them over to Michigan, or we would go over there. Now, we have lots of great musicians in Kalamazoo and Michigan as well. But sometimes, you know, if you're looking for a little something different. So, yeah, most of those guys were on my last album. So that was kind of my starting point. And then I filled in from there.
From what you were talking about in terms of your identity, that speaks directly to the second cut on the album. And the second cut on the album is Give Me a Name. It is a song about identity and perhaps lost identity and trying to reclaim an identity or simply trying to get an identity in the first place.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about your story, and that occurred a couple times because you went to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music and realized that was not your identity.
Mm.
And you had to seek an identity for the first time then.
Mm-hmm.
And who you were. And then coming to Savannah, it was the same thing. You're coming to an area that no one knows you and you don't know anybody, and therefore you don't have a name.
Yeah. It was the weirdest sensation, and I described it to a friend as floating in Jell-O for 2 years. You know, I've always been someone who is highly visionary. I know what I want to do. I'm thinking through it. I'm developing it in my mind. And suddenly, that just wasn't happening. And suddenly, I wanted someone to just tell me what to do because I was so lost. And it was such a foreign experience. So, yeah, Give Me a Name is really about just somebody rescue me from this chasm.
And it's so interesting the way you phrased it. Teach me my goodness. Show me the path. Make it all make sense. And then the line, shape me a costume. Read me my lines. As in, it's a drama. It's acting. And that perhaps comes from your musical theater background in terms of that is what you have to do when you have a new role. And indeed, this is a new role that needs a costume and needs the lines that you give as part of that role.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it seems as though identity is an evolving process over the lifespan. I mean, I'm 48 now, so I've had some identities. So that was the interesting thing is, like, how do I find the core? Is music, is my creativity still the core if I have been through all these phases, which a lot were musical?
Well, I think we've all gone through trying to establish a new identity. I mean, after after 35 years in a profession and 21 years here in a particular job and knowing people from that job's perspective around the community, moving then into the music community at that point was a big change. And so one has to establish a new identity.
Yeah. I think what's different for me about this time is that it's not just an external identity. It's more of an internal identity of reckoning with who I really am and who I think I am and how important that is to really be aware of and consider.
And that's, I think, the give me a name part of it, too, because it's the personal identity. The name is probably the most important thing for your own personal identity, as well as reflecting the external identity.
Yeah, it wasn't like somebody notice me and give me fame. It was like somebody call me part of their tribe.
But the title of the album and the first cut on the album is Big Dreams Die Slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is that particularly probably when you were at the Manhattan School of Music, big dreams start to develop.
That's the business of dreams.
And so going into life as a jazz singer was probably one of the biggest of the dreams.
Yep.
But that changed as you went into perhaps teaching. You became a teacher.
I did teach for a long time. I wonder if it's not that the dreams died, because in to be honest, my dreams are still my dreams. I think what died was my relationship to the dream, which I don't consider a bad thing. And when I was in my 20s and 30s, I was just working so hard to be good enough and to prove myself and be worthy of this identity that I wanted. And I thought that fulfilling that dream would solve so many of my internal struggles. And, you know, even when I got an interview in Downbeat, this was something I had wanted for years and years. And I just really felt nothing much when it happened. And, you know, you hear that and it's true, because the dream is being purified, I think we could say. The dream is not going to be, I don't want to use this word, but like prostituted for some other purpose. It's not going to be used to fulfill my self-worth. And I don't have that completely sorted, but I'm completely aware that that's the transition that I'm in right now, which I'm happy and excited about, because I'm looking forward to creating and performing when I'm not asking the music to provide that for me.
And again, the lyric of this song is really interesting, because of the fact that one doesn't think of it this way until you shared with us your thoughts about the way it is. As we go through life, there isn't any notice. We don't receive a notice in the mail saying, this is the next transition you're going to make in your life.
Right.
There's no signs saying, go this way or go that way. This is a curve. There isn't any highway that takes us to where we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
But it is all a matter of learning it as you go through that process. And it may be the fact that you are on a highway in the dark, going someplace that you don't know where you're going, that
right.
You say, oh, I'm here.
Yeah, and I think that's what I mean by big dreams die slowly. It's happening and you're watching it happen at the same time. Where's the tail of this? I don't know. When does one door close and another one open? I'm not sure.
There wasn't any phone call telling me it's time.
And the arrangements of each of these songs is very interesting, too, from an instrumental standpoint, because we have Big Dreams Die Slowly is basically a quartet. It's piano, bass, drums, the classic rhythm section with piano, and then guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And so they each have their chance to shine, but the rhythm section pretty much in this stays the rhythm section.
Yeah.
And then Give Me a Name, it opens with vocalese. And that reoccurs periodically.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do all the voices?
Yes.
As voiceovers?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts.
Because there's some nice harmonies in this. I'll sound redundant because I'll keep saying there are so wonderful harmonies as you go through this. And there's a keyboard solo in this particular movement. This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners like you and by the 2026 Savannah Music Festival, which runs from March 25th through April 5th. Jazz programming will feature Pat Metheny's Side Eye 3 Plus, Tord Gustafson Trio, John Schofield Trio, Julian Lodge Quartet featuring John Medeski, and more. More information and tickets can be found at www.savannahmusicfestival.org. The Savannah Philharmonic's Music of Empire Elgar's Enigma concert with the guest conductor Benjamin Manis is on Saturday, March 28th at 7:30 p.m. in the Lucas Theater for the Arts and features, in addition to Elgar's Enigma variations, the violist Philip Dukes performing Vaughan Williams' Flos Campi with the Savannah Philharmonic Chorus. More information and tickets are available at savannahphilharmonic.org. Georgia Southern University presents On the Verge, a new music series spotlighting boundary-pushing ideas and innovative performance experiences, on March 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Otis S. Johnson Cultural Arts Center, 201 Montgomery Street, Savannah. Admission is without charge, but tickets are required. More information and tickets are available at www.savannahga.gov/1058/upcoming-events.
This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December.
Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with singer-songwriter Ashley Daneman about both the new album, Big Dreams Die Slowly, which was released on Friday, January 30th, and she'll be performing at Jazz Tapas Bar, 52 Barnard Street, Savannah, this coming Saturday, March 14th, beginning at 7:30 p.m., and as part of the Savannah Jazz Concert Series on Sunday, March 22nd at 5 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency, that's 2 West Bay Street in Savannah, and she'll be performing Sunday, April 19th at 3 p.m. right around the corner here at the Unitarian Universalist Church on Troop Square. Then we move on to Real. Real is, in a sense, a continuation to me of the previous song to that, and that's Give Me a Name, because having a name makes things real.
But things are real even without having that name.
Mm.
And so it speaks to the things that are around you that are real, that are tangible. Even though without a position in that world, it's hard to put solidity to things, but they are real.
Yeah, I experienced depersonalization and derealization during my time of burnout. And a lot of that song is just trying to ground myself and remind myself I'm not floating off into the ether. Even if it doesn't feel real, it is real. And I also had vertigo, which is highly disturbing. And that song was also, again, the room isn't spinning, I'm here. So that's really what that one came out of.
And in the song Real, there's the line, I know my name, I know my location.
Mm.
And so there's that centering back to the previous song is, what is my name? Now it's a centering in terms of, I do have a name. I know my name. And I know where I am.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I think each song is its own coping strategy. This one is, okay, you know your name. I know my location, you know? And the other one is kind of, I surrender. I give up.
help me.
Yeah, help me. Exactly.
And this is sort of a self-realization song, I guess.
Hmm.
Because you're putting yourself in with what you know is real around you. And the listing of things that are real sort of ends with, music is here. Music is real.
Mm.
And sort of like, we are music. And art, which music is really more real than anything else, except love.
That's my logic.
This piece is really musically very interesting because of the fact that at the beginning, you have these series of forzando hits.
Mm-hmm.
With each line, there's a hit. And then you have into this Latin rhythm.
Yeah.
Which is in itself an interesting combination in the context of the song lyric.
Mm-hmm.
So why a Latin rhythm in this particular context?
So it was something we worked out on the spot in the studio, right? Trying to get the right feeling. This song took a while. It was meant to be kind of like a circusy klezmer. It was meant to have that kind of almost disorienting type of feeling. It ended up being a little more tame, but that was the intention.
And then there's a piano solo in it, or keyboard solo. And then you have also these rhythmic forzando hits as you go through the rest of the piece. But at the very ending, where you have the line, I know what I'm doing, it becomes very ethereal.
Yeah, it's a whole tone scale there. I don't know if people know what that is, but it's instead of doing a major scale, you actually go equal steps, whole steps between every single note, which has that kind of like ethereal kind of, we're going to go to someplace else now. Yeah, that was me being like, I'm saying with my mouth, I know what I'm doing, but I don't know what I'm doing. And so musically was able to establish context for that.
And when you're going through some of the circumstances that you've talked about, but we all do it, you see yourself as different.
Mm.
Different from others. And the next song is Different is Good, They Say.
Mm.
And I love that. I mean, that's part of the lyric, but it is, I love that concept of different is good. People say different is good.
Yeah.
But when you're in the situation of being different, not so sure.
I'm also not so sure if they really mean that. They might say it, but there's a consequence to being different. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's both.
In the song, you talk about that. You say different is good, but have you ever asked me about that?
Yeah. Well, I think it's weird to say this person's different or I'm different. Like, we're all unique. And I mean, it's hard to say what's the bell curve on human behavior. I know it's there, but I don't know how useful it is.
And being different is often different for you. You're not used to that. And so you sort of have to find your way. And it's like finding your way in the darkness.
Yeah. I guess I wasn't sure, and I maybe still am not sure how different I am. You know, we can't know each other's inner experiences. This one person says, don't compare your insides to someone else's outsides, because it's just not a fair comparison. I was very much in this process of figuring out, what are my tangible differences, standard deviations away from the norm, and how can I be aware of those and solve for those, or just be more kind to myself because of them.
And this song ends in a very positive light. I'll be all right.
I really love the end of the song. It's probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite spot. I just love the lead up to it, and then building out those codas with all the layers is super fun for me.
And this piece is structurally, musically, quite different from the previous ones because it has a rhythm guitar opening that becomes the ostinato that is under the rest of the band.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be another one that opens with a rhythm guitar opening that becomes the ostinato, and then there's a solo guitar on top of the rhythm guitar.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that. This one has a piano solo on top of it.
Yeah.
Never enough. Never like them. Never on top. Always on the mend. Always on guard. Exactly what's wrong. But never having proof. Never enough. Never like them. Never. Thank you. impossible night. And if my will carries through, it'll all be all right. It'll be all right. It'll be all right. It'll be all right. Somehow, some way, it'll be all right. 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 It'll be all right.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with singer-songwriter Ashley Daneman. And then we close the album with Hard Times Come Again No More.
Yeah.
Of course, written by that famous jazz composer Stephen Foster.
Exactly.
And there is a favorite recording.
James Taylor, Yo-Yo Ma.
You got it. Yeah.
Yep.
On Appalachian Journey album.
Yeah.
And I think what triggered my thought about that album from this particular recording that you did was the wonderful use of the bass.
Mm.
Because it's you with it's a bass ostinato opening, which continues the ostinato pretty much until about mid-song, then it changes a little bit. But it's basically you and the bass player. You sing a little scat, a little vocalese, as well as the lyric itself. And that took me back to Edgar Meyer, who is mm-hmm. one of my absolute favorite bass players.
Yeah. That was all Andrew. He just kind of saw the chart. I gave them a very simple chart, gave him a simple chart with the changes, and he just was like, what about this? And I was like, that's hot. Yeah. I initially recorded that song with a cello player and myself, and he was picking and making chords and stuff, so I kind of knew I wanted it just me and strings. And, you know, I feel really free when it's just me and the bass. I mean, you can't mess up. So it was the perfect choice, and I love that song a lot.
Well, that's another thing, too, with cello, including cello in jazz ensembles. Mm-hmm. We go to a festival. We always miss the first weekend of the Savannah Music Festival because we head up to Big Ears Festival in Knoxville, Tennessee. And that is a combination of what one often calls new music, mm-hmm. which is progressive jazz and contemporary classical music. And the number of jazz ensembles with cello players now has increased tremendously.
Mm.
I always joke 50 years ago when I was a cello player, we weren't as cool. Now we're cool. But, and you see that a lot now with a cello playing the role of the bass. So they won't have a bass player necessarily in the band. They'll have a cello player, but the cello player will do the walking bass, for instance.
Interesting.
So that's not unusual these days. And, but it's, this is just such a wonderful rendition of this song.
Thank you.
It soars way up there.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite to the Appalachian Journey version, but
yeah.
still,
hey,
I can think
enough.
About it. I mean, James Taylor, too. Yes, I love James Taylor, but at Tanglewood, he now performs every year at Tanglewood. He has two or three nights that he plays at Tanglewood. But at the very, very beginning of July or at the very end of June. And so we're not quite ready to go up there for a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
Because we're there often until middle of August. And so we're not quite ready to go up for for just him and then for 2 weeks not doing anything.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, as much as I love James Taylor, not quite to that point yet. Anyways, but this is just such a wonderful rendition of this song.
Thank you. This song is special to me also because someone saw the video recording of me with the cellist several years ago, and they found me on the internet, and they said, hey, like, can you come sing this at my friend's funeral? She just died. She died in middle age from cancer. And they're like, but we want you to sing this song in this way. And it was, you know, this was the spirit of it. And so, what do they call it? Like, if I was a doula, I would be a death doula of music, right? Like, I've never said this about myself before, but what I mean is to be able to have a song like this that is so core to the human experience that's lasted over 150 years and to be able to serve people grieving at a funeral, like, wow, it's just, this song is always so special to me because of that.
'Tis a sign that is wafted across the troubled wave. 'Tis a wail that is heard upon the shore. 'Tis a dirge that is murmured around a lowly grave. Oh, hard times, come again no more. Yeah, it is truly a remarkable song. And as I said, remarkably done with the bass. It's just, again, it's going back. The version from the Appalachian Journey album, of course, has Mark O'Connor on violin and Yo-Yo Ma on cello, but as well as James Taylor. But again, it was the Edgar Meyer connection, I think, that connected me with this song, with your rendition of this song, with that particular rendition as well. Absolutely fabulous.
Thanks.
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears, while we all sup sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times, come again no more. 'Tis the song, 'tis the sigh of the weary. Hard times, come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times, come again no more. Go da 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 da. Go da 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 da. Go da 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 da. While we seek mirth and beauty, there is music light and gay. There are frail forms fainting at the door. Though their voices are silent, their pleading looks will say, oh, hard times come again no more. And it's the song, it's the sigh of the weary. Hard times, come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times, come again no more. No more, no more. No more, no more. No more, no more. Toils her life away. voice would be merry at sighing of the day or hard times come again no more. It's the song, it's the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. Tis a sigh that is wafted across the troubled wave. Tis a wail that is heard upon the shore. Tis a dirge that is murmured around the lonely grave. Oh, hard times come again no more. It's the song, it's the sigh of the weary. Oh, hard times come again no more. It's a murmur of the lonely grave. Again no more. Many days you have lingered you many days you have lingered.
Is there anything about this album you really, really wanted to talk about that we haven't dived into?
I don't think so. I think I'm still in process. I'm still putting words to where I am. I'm just baby steps right now coming back online.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I've been talking with jazz singer-songwriter Ashley Daneman about the new album, Big Dreams Die Slowly, which was released on Friday, January 30th. And she's going to be performing this weekend at Jazz Tapas Bar. That's 52 Barnard Street. And this is Saturday, March 14th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. And as part of the Savannah Jazz Concert Series on Sunday, March 22nd at 5 p.m. And that is at the Hyatt Regency at 2 West Bay Street in Savannah. And just around the corner from the studio, she'll be performing on Sunday, April the 19th at 3 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church here on Troop Square here in Savannah. And I want to thank you, Ashley Daneman, so very much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you. It's been lovely talking with you, Dave.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1.